This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neal Conan is away. The use of DNA evidence to determine guilt or innocence has led to the release of scores of prisoners who were wrongfully convicted of a crime. Some live in states that provide automatic compensation when they're released. Others live in states that don't necessarily provide anything. Alan Crotzer is one of them. Convicted of raping a mother and her 12-year-old daughter, Crotzer was released after serving 24 years in prison when DNA evidence proved that he was innocent. Now Crotzer is asking the state of Florida to pay him $1.25 million to compensate for what he lost when he was locked away. We'll hear from Alan Crotzer in a minute, but first, what do we owe the wrongfully convicted? Should they be financially compensated, and if so, how much? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. And you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. Joining us now from member station WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida, is Alan Crotzer. Alan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I wonder if we could begin by asking you to just explain the circumstances surrounding your rape conviction, how that came about.
In July of 1981, July 10th to be exact, I was arrested in St. Petersburg, Florida, charged with what they term as a home invasion. Now, it was, as you spoke of earlier, it was a double rape, robbery, kidnap by three black males. It happened in Jason County, which is Hillsborough County. I'm from Pinellas County in Florida. I was charged with that, and 10 months later, I was tried and convicted and sentenced to 130 years, one-third jurisdiction, and was told I'd stay there for the rest of my natural life.
Now, did the victims of this crime testify against you?
Yes, they did. They testified that I was 6 feet tall, light complected, 180, 200 pounds. In fact, I was 5'5", very dark in complexion, only weighing 135 pounds. And that's what they testified to, me being that person. And evidently that was enough to sentence me to 130 years in Florida State Prison System.
Well, how do you think that that conviction came about if the testimony was incorrect?
Well, first of all, it's very obvious from the face of the record that the policemen, the detectives, and everybody involved at that time didn't do their job. I knew where I was at the time that crime happened. I was nowhere near the scene of that crime. I didn't know the people that perpetrated the crime, and I didn't know the victims. I knew where I was, and everybody involved, as far as coming and testifying on our behalf, came and did that and told them where I was, and nobody believed it. So it was just poor police work.
Yeah.
I was young, poor, black, and very convenient for a horrendous crime.
And when you were sentenced to more than 100 years in prison, you thought what?
Well, my mother, I always give praise to her and God. She was always there for me. She always told me that when God fixes it, fix it good. But I had to keep my spirits up, and she was there to keep them up. But there were times when I first went to Rayfoot the Rock, here in Florida, notorious Rock, the worst prison on the planet at that time, I felt that I wouldn't make it out of there alive. I was only 20 years old.
Yeah.
And it was pretty rough. I did 3 years and 4 months there. There were times I thought I wouldn't make it because everything around me was dying except me, it seemed. But I'm here.
Hmm. And how was your evidence, how did the DNA evidence finally come to the fore that proved your innocence? How did that all come about?
Well, I was reading a lot. I was always trying to help myself get out. I was filing motions after motions. I wrote a writ of mandamus trying to compel the lower courts to DNA test me after hearing about DNA testing around the country. But the lower court wouldn't take jurisdiction in DNA testing me post-conviction-wise. I had to be charged to be DNA tested, from the beginning, which that wasn't happening back then. And when I was arrested, so I kept writing and writing and writing, and finally I wrote to Barry Sheck's office up in New York, Innocent Project of New York, and one of his staff attorneys, David Mitchell, who at that time was under him, and his basically was a volunteer there, Sam Roberts, which I love both of them so much because they took 3.5 years of their life out to help me. These men took my case, and for 3.5 years they put their life on hold until they got me out.
What was your reaction when you found out that you were going to get out of prison, that you had been wrongfully convicted and that this was known now?
Well, it wasn't tangible until it actually happened. Jeff Walsh had dug up a lot of information, who's the investigator on my case here in Tallahassee. He's a collateral lawyer, investigator. But he had already proven to a lot of people through just his evidence that I was innocent without DNA. And they would refuse to let me fall through the cracks again, even if there wasn't no DNA. But the day that I found out I was going to get out was the day, what made it tangible was the day that the judge actually said, Mr. Cross, are you ready to hear the words you've been waiting over 24 years to hear? And I said, yes. And he said, you're free to go. And I cried like a baby. Yeah, the tough guy cried like a baby.
And how long ago was that now, again?
That was January 23rd, 2006. And I think today makes 2 years, and I think maybe 12 days I've been out.
And what has your life been like since you got out? Were you ready for what you encountered?
No, I couldn't even wash my hands in a public bathroom when I went for a job interview at St. Anthony's Hospital in St. Pete, and I didn't know how to make the sinks work. I was very embarrassed by that. I was afraid to tell anyone that I didn't know how to make the sinks work. Finally, I told a photographer that had been following me around, who became one of my closest associates now, Vance Jacobs, and I told him that I didn't know how to make the sinks work, and he told me about the sensors. I didn't know how to make a cell phone work. I knew nothing. Right now, I'm completely computer illiterate. It's very hard to compete in the job market. In Florida, there's no rehabilitation, so therefore there's nothing that would have enhanced my learning to the point where I could compete out here. So I chose anyway to fight my case instead of trying to find any kind of obsolete training in prison. But I am completely computer literate. I do have problems in the job market, although right now I am employed at Tallahassee Plant Nursery, where I work full-time, and I was able to get a job, and I thank them very much for what they did.
You are seeking compensation from the state of Florida, $1.25 million.
Exactly.
Why? How will that make it up to you?
You can never give back more than half my life to me. You can never give back any aspirations I had about being whatever I wanted to be, a Coast Guard. You can't give that back. Heavy equipment operator. You can't give that back. The education that I thought I would get one day, how I was going to be able to afford, I don't know. You can't give that back. And definitely you cannot give me back my mother, who died after 20 years of wrongful incarceration, thinking that I would get out to see her one day. You can never give me her back. So money was not going to change that. But what money will do is help me to start my new life. You see, I'm married now. Got two stepkids. And I would like to make life as pleasant as possible. I would also like to get that 150 hours free education that comes along with compensation that may help me to upgrade my education to the point where I can actually compete in the job market and make some of myself. I have never given up on me. God has never given up on me. The man that helped me get out has never given up on me, so I'll never give up on trying to do what's right.
Now, the Florida legislature has not yet approved compensation for you. Why? Why do you think that is?
I have no idea why people try to find reasons not to do the right thing when they can, always find reason to do the right thing. I don't understand it. It doesn't make a bunch of sense to me. I know those people are highly educated, and I know they're real people just like I am. And I don't know why they keep trying to find reasons not to do what's right. I don't understand it.
I'm going to ask that question now of Representative Alan Bogdanoff, the majority whip for the Florida House of Representatives. She is joining us from her office in Tallahassee. Representative Bogdanoff, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Maybe you can explain to us or answer the question I just asked, Mr. Crotzer, why hasn't the Florida legislature passed a bill that would provide compensation for him?
Well, first of all, Mr. Crotzer, hello, and it's good to hear your voice again. We met last session, and I can't answer that because the House of Representatives did pass it. Myself and many others on the House floor worked very hard to get his $1.25 million into a bill, and we passed it out of the Florida House. It was our counterpart, the Senate, and I can't speak for the Senate. I do have no idea why they refused to give him compensation. I do know that there was a sense that instead of each individual wrongfully incarcerated, and hopefully there weren't that many, but unfortunately one is too many, that there be a global bill, and that we address this not just on an individual basis, but we address it on a more global basis, which seems to be a movement throughout the country, where, as it stands now, Mr. Crotzer's been out of jail for 2 years, prison for 2 years, and he has, basically not had the support that he needs, whereas if we could pass a global bill then it would have an automatic trigger for those that were wrongfully incarcerated. I've written a bill. It's currently in bill drafting. I'm working with the Senate because I believe there's an appetite for it. The Senate president has said it's going to be on the top of his priority list to create a global bill.
And explain to me what this global bill would do for somebody like Mr. Kratzer.
Well, some of the components that I'm looking at on my version would basically be a certain amount of money annually for every year wrongfully incarcerated, certainly money for education, housing assistance, some sort of counseling assistance, anything that somebody would need to deal with some of the issues. I had a rather long conversation with Mr. Kratzer along with Majority Leader Hasner, and we talked about, you know, if you could tell us what you need, tell me what you need, and let's put it in a bill, because mm-hmm. nobody would know better than he would.
Now, as I understand it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the bill that you have proposed also includes something that would prevent any compensation being given to someone who had been convicted of a previous crime. Is that correct?
Well, right now, there is a clean hands provision, simply because it seems to be the direction of our counterparts in the Senate. It's very difficult to craft a bill around Mr. Kratzer. What I'm working on right now is to figure out if we're going to do a global bill and there's an insistence that there be a clean hands provision, which would be prior felonies, not misdemeanors, but prior felonies, mm-hmm. that we still move forward and do what the House did last year and give Mr. Kratzer his money. He has a unique circumstance. And, you know, certainly...
Because Mr. Kratzer, just to clarify, have you been convicted of a felony?
Yes, ma'am.
So that would you wouldn't be provided by this?
Well,
by this,
this clean hands provision is something that has came up. And the thing is that there was... When you look back on the past and you look at the only person that has ever has been compensated through DNA testing, exoneree, this man deserved more than what he got, but there was no clean hands provision for him.
Mm-hmm.
His money was given to him unconditionally.
You're saying in Florida you're talking about.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Wilton Dedge.
Yeah.
And I met Mr. Dedge, a very nice person. He deserved more than what they gave him, but the thing is he had misdemeanors.
Okay.
Now they're saying that not a misdemeanor but a felony, but...
Right.
Correct.
It's
an issue of felony versus misdemeanor.
Okay, both of you, I want both of you to stay with us. We're going to continue this discussion after a short break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about what should happen when someone's imprisoned and later found innocent. What would be adequate compensation? Our guest is Alan Kratzer. He spent 24 years in prison for rape before he was exonerated by DNA evidence. The state of Florida is still figuring out if and how he should be compensated. Also with us is Representative Ellen Bogdanoff. She is Majority Whip for the Florida House of Representatives. And you, of course, are invited to join our discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-8255 or send an email to talk@npr.org. And check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Representative Bogdanoff, we were talking before the break about this idea. You were saying that you are drafting a global bill that would not just apply to one person's case, but would apply to anyone who is in this situation. But it would also include a clause, I guess you would call it, that would say that if you've been convicted of a felony before, you couldn't get anything. Is that right?
Basically, you know, and it's very challenging to write, because certainly in Mr. Kratzer's situation, I believe that he deserves the money, you know, more than anybody probably. And we did, like I said to you, pass it out of the Florida House. The challenge is that how do you write a bill for all future wrongfully convicted people and not necessarily include folks that the taxpayers, the citizens of this state, would not necessarily want to compensate. Perhaps somebody who had four or five felonies, but, you know, got, you know, was maybe not guilty of the six and spent an extra 2 to 3 years in prison. I'm not saying that it's right that anybody spends time, but we also have to kind of measure that against, I guess, what people are willing to accept. And I will tell you that the sense is, and the feedback that you get, is that people do not want somebody with, you know, a rap sheet, you know, a long rap sheet, necessarily getting compensated by the state. But at the same time, how do you protect somebody like a Mr. Kratzer, where, you know, it was one felony conviction, he spent 24 years for something he did not do, and it's likely that, you know, felony conviction probably you know, set their sights on him in the first place. So it was like he was almost at a disadvantage from day one. It was unjustified. The government made a horrible, horrible mistake, and they need to be held accountable for it. And again, you know, I'm hoping that we can work it out. And it's not necessarily a done deal. This is all part of the negotiation process. But again, I have to work with my counterparts in the Senate, and I know that they have been in the past somewhat adamant about a clean hands provision. I'm hoping we can work through it and make sure that Mr. Crotzer, one way or another, gets his money.
Why up until this point has this been something that's been coming to the state legislature? Why up until this point is this something that's been coming to the state legislature on an individual basis, on a case-by-case basis? Why is that happening that way?
Certainly nobody championed the issue. I came into the Florida legislature in 2004. I had worked in the Innocence Project as part of my law school clinical experience. I had a personal experience with it, and actually it was my professor who kind of got me hooked on the concept of extending the DNA deadline and being somebody who had the experience who could kind of educate the other members. And it's like anything else. Most people bring issues that are connected to them to the legislature to fix. And we had Wilton Dedge, which was another horrible case that I actually had worked a little bit on the case when I was in law school. So when you start to see these things and it affects you personally, you want to right a wrong. And that's how a lot of legislation gets passed. Either the citizens come to the legislature or legislators themselves have that experience. And I think it's an issue of timing.
All right. We're talking about compensation for those who have been wrongfully convicted of a crime and served many years in prison. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 800-989-8255. We're going to go to Imani, who's calling from Ketchum, Idaho. Hello, Imani.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So my question is, I understand what your argument is, but if you've been wrongly incarcerated, regardless of what you've done before, you're still wrongly incarcerated. How do you not deserve compensation?
I'm not going to disagree with you. It's a matter of who and how much, and you have to weigh everything against, you know, all of the other people who have different opinions in this process. And I'm just simply trying to negotiate the best I can and give the maximum number of people compensation. But I'm not telling you that you're wrong. I can't say that I necessarily disagree, but when do you cut it off? And, you know, there are people who would believe that if somebody, and again, this is nothing to do with Mr. Crotzer, because, again, I strongly believe he deserves his compensation, but if you have somebody who's committed two murders and was, you know, wrongfully incarcerated on a third murder, does he deserve the same kind of compensation? I wouldn't even consider putting him in the same category as a Mr. Crotzer. And
why
that's
not?
What you're up against. Because I wouldn't.
You can't do that. It's just like when you're in court, you can't bring up past things if it's not relevant. That's not relevant to the case at hand. He was wrongfully committed of that murder, regardless of what number it was.
I'm not going to tell you that you're necessarily wrong with your opinion. I'm telling you the feedback that you get in this process and from the citizens of this state as to whether or not they would have that tolerance to take taxpayers' money and to provide somebody compensation.
Imani, if you stay tuned, we are going to have a guest coming on in a moment who I think can talk about this issue more broadly and how it's handled in different states and differences between different states and how they're handling these things. So we're talking right here about...
Can I just make one more comment?
Oh, sure.
Leaving things up to the public to decide on what they feel is right, that's not how it should work. It should be what's morally right. And if we did something wrong to somebody, we should have to pay for it. That's just my comment.
Okay, thanks for calling in, Imani. And again, we are having a guest on in a moment who's going to give us a sense of how these kinds of cases are being handled across the country. And it varies a great deal, and that's, I guess, one of the questions at the bottom of all this is the idea that why is it being, and I've already asked you this, I know that Representative Bogdanoff, but you know, this idea of like going on a case-by-case basis, on the one hand that takes each person's situation into account so that the problems you've raised about, well, if somebody's been convicted of two murders rightfully, should they get anything if they've been wrongfully convicted of a third, those kinds of things, if you handle on a case-by-case basis, you can deal with it. On the other hand, then somebody, you know, like Mr. Crotzer, his case, you know, doesn't get dealt with.
The global bill would not preclude anybody from still coming. We are not eliminating the claims process. So that individual that perhaps maybe was convicted of a third murder would still have the opportunity to come before the legislature on a claims bill wouldn't necessarily be qualified under the global bill, and then the individual legislators of that time would make that decision as to whether or not they believed the case was egregious enough so that that person deserved it. But again, a lot of people feel there needs to be a clean hands provision. You could argue, and you could argue, and I'm not going to say that you're, you know, that there's necessarily not a valid point that anybody wrongfully convicted deserves compensation. But again, it's like anything else. It's, you know, you're weighing all of the options and you're trying to negotiate so that you can get something through to protect those that need to be protected the most.
Representative Bogdanoff, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Representative Ellen Bogdanoff is Majority Whip for the House of Representatives in Florida. She joined us from her office in Tallahassee. Alan Crotzer is still with us. He spent 24 years in prison for crimes he didn't commit. And joining us now from our bureau in New York is Barry Scheck. He is the co-director of the Innocence Project at the Benjamin N. Cardoza School of Law. His organization works to exonerate the wrongfully convicted through DNA testing. Welcome to the program, Mr. Scheck.
Great to be with you.
Now, maybe you could... We've been talking very specifically about one case in Florida and how Florida is now beginning to try and address this question. But give us a sense of how other states deal with compensating the wrongfully convicted.
Well, I'll go right to that issue, but I do want to say one thing about Allen's case, and that is that he was convicted of a robbery at the age of 17. And I think that Representative Bogdanoff was reflecting the fact that when you're talking even about a clean hands provision, you know, I can't conceive of a clean hands provision that would not protect Alan Crotzer. It should be something. If you're really going to do this, and I'm not sure that you should do it at all, but it should be eliminating the career criminals, violent career criminals who have many violent felony convictions, if you're even going to conceive of that. But there are 22 states now in the country that do have compensation statutes. And there aren't really clean hands provisions in any of them, except one instance, I think, in Alabama, they say that if you commit a new felony, that could prevent your right to compensation. But just take the state of Alabama. Alabama gives $50,000 a year for each year of wrongful incarceration. Texas gives $50,000 a year for each year of wrongful incarceration. So I'm becoming hopeful that Florida will be able to do something similar to that. Frankly, I think the provision should be $100,000 a year at least.
But, you know, if one state gives $50,000 a year for each year's compensation, then another state doesn't give anything necessarily, I gather. It just seems wildly unfair to me somehow.
Well, it is wildly unfair. The federal government actually has $50,000 a year for felonies, federal felonies, $100,000 a year for each year on death row. And remember, these figures do not in any way relate to what somebody could get as a plaintiff in a federal civil rights case. And those are very, very rare. You see, ordinarily, people have a lot of trouble suing because even if you're innocent by clear and convincing evidence or there's no question you're innocent like Alan Crotzer, in order to collect in a federal civil rights action, you have to show that there was bad faith misconduct on the part of a law enforcement officer. If a district attorney deep sixed exculpatory evidence, you still can't ordinarily sue district attorneys because they have absolute immunity. So it's very hard to sue. But when those cases get to the juries, these people get $1 million a year or more. And no appellate court has ever knocked down an award of $1 million a year or more for any one of these plaintiffs because no one in their right mind would think that if you were, did close to a quarter of a century, as Alan Crotzer did, in maximum security prisons in the state of Florida, he was stabbed. He, as he was saying before, served in one of the worst prisons in America, the Rock, before which eventually closed by the federal courts. No one would think that that was really worth just $50,000 or $100,000 a year. But look, these are political problems. We're trying to deal with them. 22 states, Alabama, California, Illinois, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Missouri, Montana, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Vermont, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wisconsin, a real cross-section of the country, already has that process. It's long overdue in Florida.
Yeah. Does this mean and that let me just see if I understand. Could Mr. Crutzer go to court for this?
Yes. Ordinarily, the way these work is that the claimant has to go into either a court or some other kind of tribunal that's set up and prove innocence. And once you prove innocence, you should be able to collect money for the time you did in prison. Some states, like the state of New York, which has had a statute for more than two decades, you go to what's known as the Court of Claims. That's a court where there's a judge, and you can collect for past and future pain and suffering and past and future lost wages. And in those cases, in most instances, without even considering past and future lost wages, people get $100,000, $120,000 a year from the judges. And, you know, that's, as I said, on the low end. So you have to go to court. You have to prove you're innocent in virtually all these statutes. You have to prove that it wasn't you who brought about your own conviction by, you know, lying or something like that. In some instances, but pretty much just prove you're innocent, you should be able to collect.
Barry Scheck is co-director of the Innocence Project at the Benjamin N. Cardozo School of Law, and you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're going to take a call now from Spencer, and Spencer is calling from Iowa, I believe.
Yes, that's right, Iowa. As a taxpayer, I'm really upset that we have prosecutors and lawmen who are willing to overlook the obvious or sometimes even worse. And I think that, like any professional, as a doctor or someone, that there should be liability insurance. I see no reason why an overzealous prosecutor should make the taxpayers have to pay for their mistakes and misjudgments and sometimes total cover-ups. You know, the legal profession protects its own. It's like the fox is in charge of the hen house here. And I think that we as taxpayers deserve better.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Jim. Jim calling from Spencer, Iowa. Thanks for your call, Jim. Mr. Scheck, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I think he makes a good point in the sense that there really is a problem with the law with respect to compensating the wrongfully convicted. Because you really can't hit the people who, you know, sometimes, you know, just violated the law by suppressing exculpatory evidence or coercing false confessions or, you know, broke rules with respect to witness identification or just perjured themselves. But we have to be realistic about it as well. You know, some prosecutor who, you know, like a Mike Nifong, you know, he's already declared bankruptcy, right? So, you know, it'd be very hard to collect the amount of money that's necessary from individuals who are working within the system. But there should be insurance policies in place, and the ultimate insurance policy is the state, because we're talking here about no-fault situations. It's a matter of basic human dignity and decency. If somebody has been incarcerated for a crime they didn't commit, like Alan Crutzer does close to a quarter of a century in prison, we as a society must make that right on a no-fault basis.
Mr. Crutzer, I know you must be a pretty hopeful person, having gotten through what you've already gotten through. Are you hopeful that you will eventually be compensated? And what do you think is fair compensation for what you went through?
I understand about the global bill, and I understand that it will put in place a process that will pay anybody like me, and I think that's the right thing to do. And yet, still, I also advocate for my own claims bill and try to get people to understand that what happened to me, like Mr. Barry Scheck said, it wasn't my fault. And I'm very hopeful that legislators will get it right this time. Like I said earlier, you can look for all the reasons you want to not do the right thing when it's easier and, you know, less money on the taxpayer in session to do what's right by the people. And
what do you think is fair compensation?
Fair compensation to me would stop me from coming back year after year begging these people to do the right thing, to go ahead on. I'm asking for less than $1 million, less than what Wilson Dedge got. I'm only asking for $50,000 a year. That's not a lot of money to me. It never can give me back what was taken from me. And this clean hands thing, I want to speak on that really. There's no difference between me and Wilton Dads. A conviction is a conviction. He had one, and so did I. No difference between me and Wilton Dads that I did more time than him. I'm a minority, person of color, and I'm asking for less money than him.
All right, Mr. Kratzer, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Kratzer.
Yeah.
And good luck with this. Alan Kratzer served 24 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. He joined us from member station WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida. We were also joined by Barry Scheck, co-director of the Innocence Project at the Benjamin N. Cardozo School of Law. Thanks so much for being with us, Mr. Scheck.
Thank you.
I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.